This is Growing Forward, a collaboration between New Mexico PBS and New Mexico Political Report, where we look at all things cannabis in New Mexico. I'm Megan Kamrick, a PBS correspondent and news director at KUNM.
And I'm Andy Lyman with New Mexico Political Report.
Since launching this podcast, we've talked to folks from various corners of the cannabis industry in New Mexico, but we haven't talked much about testing.
Since I've been covering the political side of cannabis, I've heard many medical cannabis users raise concerns about safe medicine. But I've also seen and heard concerns from producers about making testing standards too rigid. It's honestly something I haven't explored very much.
So we decided to learn a little bit more about the process by taking a tour of a working cannabis testing lab.
Where are we, Andy?
We are at Rio Grande Analytics. They are a testing facility for cannabis. So they test for, I think, maybe heavy metals, pesticides, contaminants. We'll probably learn more in a little bit. We're going to meet Barry, the proprietor, owner of Rio Grande Analytics. And one thing I just realized before we were walking in is that I know nothing about testing after covering this for years. I have not been to a testing facility. I don't know how it works. I don't know what equipment they use. I know nothing about it.
Wow, so I'm not the only newbie here at this interview.
We're both going.
The building was surrounded by a gate with a very plain exterior that gave no indication of what was happening inside. We were greeted by Barry Dungan, the company's CEO, who told us that the company deliberately downplays its presence in the neighborhood.
Hey, how are you?
It will be a little loud. It might not be the best ambient noise.
Okay. We were talking about your building as we walked in, like, no signage, very nondescript. Is that deliberate?
It really is. The people that need our services know where we are, and the ones that don't really don't need to know what we're doing.
If you don't mind, can we start with whatever tour you would like to, what you can show us?
Oh, absolutely. You guys can see everything I've gotten.
Barry's path to professional cannabis testing began at New Mexico State University, where he was a researcher. He eventually helped start Rio Grande Analytics in Las Cruces, and earlier this year, the entire operation moved to Albuquerque.
I got very lucky. All of the employees, except for the new guys, moved up with me from Las Cruces. I was a lab manager there for 10 years, and in some capacity had worked with everyone, and when it was time to make the move, everybody came with us, so that was very exciting.
Cool.
The room that we have here ultimately will be set up for pesticides and heavy metal analysis.
What is that thing doing?
So there is an oil sample, I believe. Let me just look at this guy really quick here. Yeah, so there's an oil sample in there, and some acetone has been applied to it, and now it's just shaking up to make sure that everything is in solution. That way, when we move to the analysis, we know the extraction was as complete as we could do it. So oil samples are a little bit different, whereas they don't need to be ground up because they ultimately dissolve in the solvent. Whereas flowers and things like this that we have weighed out, same thing, they get acetone applied to them, and then they go under this polytron homogenizer. And so after this thing has ground them up, it ultimately looks like a slurry. Let me actually grab one that's done. Oil that we've already extracted, and you can see there's kind of an amber hue to it. So that's ultimately what that one will look like. And then the flower sample, you can see there's really nothing left in the bottom. It's just completely ground up. You know, the smaller we can grind it, the more surface area there is and the better extractability you have. And so the finer we can grind it, the more efficiently we can extract all of that stuff.
Cool.
I'm just going to leave these in here for now, and I'll put them up later. But so samples have come in this morning, and Paul has taken them to the sterile hood and taken the samples that need to be done for microbial activity. And then they've gone through the rest of the lab that we will see later for potency testing here. There's mycotoxin samples that have been pulled, and for the oils, residual solvents if needed.
So what are you guys looking for in these samples?
These samples are specifically for potency, and so we're looking for which cannabinoids are present and how much of those are there. And so there are a few cannabinoids that we report to the state, but there are others that we detect, and we put those on our certificate of analyses as well. The idea really is to test for as much as we possibly can, and the more information that gets to the patient, the better.
Barry led us through various rooms, each filled with complicated, expensive machines, and explained that they're trying to anticipate what standards they will need to meet once the state issues the regulations.
So this corner will be the pesticides, and then this corner that's taped off here will ultimately be for heavy metal testing. And so there will be an ICP-MS, which is an inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometer, and that does all the heavy metal analysis. So we're looking at things similar to what is in your water, lead, mercury, those types of things. We can test for a whole host of things. And like I said, the list isn't made yet, so I'm not sure exactly what the targets are going to be, but I would assume it will be what was in April.
So you're pretty confident that you're not going to have to get equipment that you're not already planning on getting?
No, this stuff is crated in California waiting for a delivery date, and the only reason I haven't said deliver it is because I don't know if I need both of the pieces of equipment right off the bat or one or the other, and since the cost is so high, I don't want to just buy them and sit on it until I'm able to use them, you know. Okay. So that's really the main reason. On my side of things, I'm just worried that they're going to say, next week you have to start doing this, you know, because yeah. I could have an unlimited budget and those pieces of equipment are not just available, you know.
Right.
So I need to have enough time to make sure, one, I can have it installed. Then I've got to go through an entire calibration, a proficiency. I've got to hire people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so this is not just a, hey, I got it next week kind
so
of thing.
So what you need is real some definitive rules and regulations before, say, January 1st when they start issuing licenses to people.
I need at least a 3-month heads up of what it's going to be, how it's going to be. The stuff that we need to buy are things that are at state labs and crime labs and forensic labs, and this isn't go to the used car lot and just get one. You know, these are very, very sophisticated pieces of equipment, and I just need as much time as possible to get them in place.
New Mexico is in sort of a limbo period when it comes to testing standards. The last attempt at updating cannabis testing rules promulgated by the State Department of Health for medical cannabis was essentially shot down by a state court judge. There are still old testing standards from the Department of Health, but the Regulation and Licensing Department has yet to issue rules for non-medical cannabis testing.
I need as much lead time on what tests are going to be required as possible. For the pesticides and heavy metals, we're looking at a $800,000 investment, and I can't go to Wells Fargo and get a loan for that because of the nature of the business. And also, these things are made overseas. They have to be shipped here. You know, what if another COVID wave comes and I need a mass spec to do pesticides, but a service engineer can't come install it for me? That will happen to any lab in New Mexico if we run into that problem. So now we can't provide what New Mexicans need to be safe. You know, do we stop selling so that we can protect public health and safety, or do we sell and not test? You know what I mean? So there's some very big ticket items that we need to know, just so I can work on the financing alone. You know, I'm not going to get financed tomorrow, you know, so there's things I need to work through on that front. And then, do I buy both of the pieces of equipment? Do we need one first? So for the pesticides, for instance, in California, the pesticides on that list, you can't just detect on LC-MS. You need a GC-MS also. So now you're looking at a multi-million dollar investment. I don't even know what the compounds on our action list are going to be, so maybe I do need both LC and GC triple quads. So, you know, these are all of the things that keep me up at night, like how am I going to make sure, for one, my employees are still employed, two, public health and safety is taken care of, and, you know, we don't want to do it for free either, but I also don't want to charge producers $500 a sample because it doesn't work for anybody at that point, you know. And then again, back to your earlier question, do we need 5 labs here? Do you think 5 labs can come to New Mexico, spend multi-million dollars on infrastructure, and then be supported by the license holders that are here? You know, and if that's the case, is quality going to go down because everybody's competing for the cheapest price or the fastest turnaround? You know, we run into a lot of other problems.
And it doesn't serve anybody if all 5 labs are in Albuquerque, right?
Exactly. Yeah. This is a big state with no delivery mechanism, and so I think that they should be parceled out across New Mexico. But again, we'll have to see where the new licenses pop up and how many there are to determine the amount of testing that needs to be done.
Here's a quick rundown of how the testing process works. Before a product, whether it be an edible, an extract, or plant material, hits the shelves, it has to be screened for a number of things like mycotoxins and microbes.
And any extracts that are made with solvents have to be checked for any residual chemicals. Plus, medical cannabis producers are required to include potency information on product labels.
All of these tests have to be done at a state-approved lab, and the state does not offer testing services itself. Rio Grande Analytics is one of only two cannabis testing labs currently approved by the state, which raises the question, how many labs do we need?
We know we need more than two, but less than 100 or something, right?
Like, Definitely.
Do we have an idea of what the range could be, or is it just completely unknown because we don't even know how many people are going to get into this?
I really think we need to see how many licenses go out first. I think the next lab in New Mexico should probably be one for RLD. You know, if they're going to certify all of these procedures that we do, they probably need to do that in-house also. I know that they're working on that, or there's a lab being set up. I don't know what stage it's in. I don't know which methods have been validated, but I think probably the compliance lab is the next one that needs to come to New Mexico as far as RLD or the people that oversee the labs need to have a lab.
Talk about your workforce and how you're going to staff up, like, because it sounds like you have to have some really specialized skills here.
Definitely so. Like I said, I was very fortunate to bring my employees from Las Cruces with me, and they had all been at NMSU in some capacity, and we had worked together on some type of project. They've all published research, and so I'm very confident in their abilities and their attention to detail. I've got a couple more friends at NMSU that are in the process of wrapping up higher degrees, and I'm gonna try as much as I can to get them to come up with us also, but I'm hoping to get to maybe 10 people by the end of the year, and then when the new rules come in, we'll see how many more we need to fill the gaps to keep up with everything. Currently, we're at 6, and I would like, I guess it depends on if you're going to come in and make forms and input data, that's a little bit different than interpreting the mass spec results for pesticides. And so probably a master's or PhD for pesticides and heavy metals, and at least some degree for anything else, really. And that's more of this whole thing of you can sit in one place long enough to get the paper. You know, your attention to detail needs to be there, and there are some things that you just have to be ultra sensitive about and other things that you understand what they're going into, but not necessarily that's the make or break deal. So as far as what type of credentials you need, I guess it's kind of across the board, but definitely a master's or a bachelor's degree in some biological science, and moving into the more intense technologies, probably a PhD in chemistry or something related.
How do you get financing for a business like this?
You know, we got very lucky. Like I said early, the testing that we had to do in the beginning was very minimal, you know, potency and microbials only. Mycotoxins slowly came in, residual solvent slowly came in, and so we have not had to take a loan yet for anything that we've done. And I think it was because the way we started as employees at NMSU, this was never going to be the full-time thing, so let's go slow, and we kind of worked it into a larger thing. That was why we didn't have to go that route. But there are more and more credit unions that are popping up that are willing to go into this industry, and I really think in the next few years there's going to be federal legislation that changes a lot of how this works.
Didn't even occur to me till just now that, you know, you have all of the science background, super smart guy, but you also have to sort of learn as you go how to run a business.
Right? Oh, absolutely. I'm a lab nerd. I am not a businessman. You know what I mean? And so I've definitely learned some the hard way, but it's been a wonderful learning experience. There are things I never thought in my life that I would do that I kind of do daily now. But it takes all of those aspects, you know, and I'm lucky that we did start small and I had to do every single aspect of the business because I understand all of the different flowing dynamics and which ones we can, you know, hone in a little bit better and others that are working properly or where we need to hire more people to fill gaps. And so that is really our main goal right now is staffing up and getting ready for the recreational market.
But if you have like an $800,000 piece of equipment, how will you
be able to pay for that?
You know, I've got some other partners, so they will ultimately help us get financing, and we've got some other assets that we can put up. Okay. Basically, that's what we're going to do is we'll all put our houses up, and hopefully we don't all lose them. No, it's not necessarily like that, but it is not just a traditional loan. There's some other people that are interested and help finance that kind of stuff.
We've addressed in previous episodes how the federal classification of cannabis can make things like banking and real estate difficult on business owners. But for a business like Rio Grande Analytics, that's not necessarily the case.
We are in a little different part of all of this because we do not manufacture, we do not cultivate, you know, we're not selling anything. And so we've had much less banking issues than I think the majority of the program has. But one thing, you know, there was the cannabis convention here a couple of weeks ago, and I heard Pat Davis mention that in the new recreational environment, if the building is not owned outright, you cannot do cannabis activities there. And so for an unlimited amount of licenses to be able to come in, I just don't understand how the real estate and the licenses are going to meet.
Some people might assume, as we did when we walked in, that there's just tons of cannabis stored in the lab. But as Barry showed us, most of it fits on a single shelf.
Yeah, this is our vault for all of our material. And this stuff has been tested, and it'll remain in here for 30 days. There's a couple of odds and ends that we just received, but for the most part, all of this stuff has been processed, and it's just being held in case we need to go back or confirm something.
So, for people that can't see, obviously, it looks maybe 7 to 8 sort of plastic bins on one shelf. So it's not like a warehouse full of material that...
Definitely, and anything 30 days out, we get rid of as soon as we can, because we don't want to be a target. You know, the less stuff in here, the fewer reasons for somebody to come break in, the better. So this is old extraction equipment here. It's all for sale. It belongs to the previous tenant. And the cost of breaking some of these blown pieces of glass, you know, it'd have to be reblown in Germany, flown over. Hopefully it doesn't break in the transit process. So we've got an agreement with them for 90 days to keep this in place. And if for some reason it doesn't sell between now and then, we'll move it.
Did you guys relocate here, or are you still in Cruces?
No, we relocated, but I am in the process of setting a lab back up down there. There's a lot of infrastructure that's going to go in with the new recreational bill. You know, I think that there'll be a lot of people that are trying to get close to state borders just for cannabis tourism and things like that. And those checkpoints are federal, and it's not going to change anytime soon. And so I want to make sure all of this works first, because it is a multi-million-dollar investment to go back down to Las Cruces. But I've got a lot of connections down there, and my other founding partners are still down there, so there may be an opportunity for something like that. But
what drew you, why did you decide to move up and out?
There's a couple of different reasons. You know, we knew the recreational market was coming, and all of the cultivation is here in Bernalillo or very close. And they closed the delivery mechanism for New Mexico. So there used to be a company called Hot Shots that was certified to transport cannabis in New Mexico. And they abruptly quit on us. And so that turned into a 600-mile-a-week drive around New Mexico to pick up samples, and it really wasn't sustainable. So we had to either move or close, and ultimately we moved.
So just for context, you know, there's the licensing is going to be open pretty soon for couriers and testing and all that other stuff. So far, it didn't seem like couriers were something that people were really trying to get licensed as, but now what you're saying is that the one courier that we had...
Yeah, I think that there's a huge market for that, you know, and I guess everybody's kind of retooling their operations to have their own drivers and things like that. I think that it's very difficult to get a courier license because of the regulations on your facility and X, Y, and Z. But I think that would be a great business for somebody. New Mexico is a huge state. People are expanding to all parts of this state, and having a delivery mechanism would go a long way.
It seems like it would be somewhat easier to get certified as a courier than to have a grow facility or a testing facility or something like that.
I would agree with you, but I've heard that the regulations are pretty difficult.
Okay.
I have not looked at them with my own two eyes, so I really can't say, but it's got to be more difficult because nobody's picked it up yet. You know what I mean?
Maybe it's just not
financially viable.
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly. I think maybe when the rec market hits, there'll be so much material that needs to move, then it might make more sense.
I think you and I talked about this a little bit on the phone, but personal production license, or PPL, can people bring their product to get tested here? Is that doable?
So we did do testing for PPLs, and I've actually got to call out to RLD to figure this out, but I don't think that PPLs are valid anymore. I think now you can grow 12 plants at home, and you don't necessarily need a license for that. And a lot of people are calling us saying, hey, do you test for people without a license? And it's like, well, I don't understand. Is that you don't have your PPL anymore, or where did the material come from?
So you know, just only testing from licensed producers at this point.
Right now, until I get an answer from RLD, I don't know how else to proceed. There's been a lot of material come in that are counterfeits, and so I don't necessarily want my certificates going around with counterfeit products or unlicensed products or being sold in some of these dispensaries that have already popped up and operating from out of state. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so I don't want to certify that as a New Mexico product if they can't prove where it came from. Or I understand some people are working on getting a license and they're doing some proof of concept stuff and those types of things. I just need a little bit more information than will you test for somebody that's not licensed. We've got some things to figure out, you know what I mean? And I think if we all come together and realize we're in this together, we can figure them out sooner. But there are definitely some issues that we need to look at.
During our tour of the lab, it became pretty clear that even the simplest explanation of how testing works on a mechanical level is not all that simple.
Is there an easy way to explain, like, the actual process there? What is the machine? It's looking for THC molecules, or?
Definitely so. So let me open this guy up here, and you see kind of the guts of what's going on.
Totally should have taken more chemistry in high school.
I spent a lot of time in the lab. That thing gets knocked off. It's fine. It keeps the window closed, but. So what happens here is we make our samples and the acetone extractions that I was telling you about. You can imagine this is like a 5-disc changer. I've got a couple of different carousels, and so I can fill these all up with samples. And there's a syringe back in here that will go to the sample that you want. It's going to draw up a volume of that sample, and it's going to get injected into this column. And so, you know, 8 inches or so long, but this column has a resin inside of it. And depending on what your compounds of interest are, you'll have a different type of resin to separate different types of compounds. This one specifically is a C18, and so there's an 18 carbon chain that's in there with basically its hand out waiting to shake hands. We injected these compounds, and they're going through that column, and they're interacting with the C18 to separate apart.
Wow. After listening to Barry talk about the science behind cannabis testing, it became clear how important the process is, and the high price tags for the needed equipment sort of seems to explain why there aren't more labs in New Mexico.
People are sending their samples with an idea of what it is, and they're just confirming it, or you're telling them, they're like, oh, well, it's...
Well, for the most part, you know, most of these people have been in the business for a while now, and they know I'm going to distill and it's going to come back in the 80 to 85% range every time. There's also some people that get just random biomass, you know, water leaves, trimmings, stuff they don't know of the quality, and so they're just going to distill it with the idea that the distillation process is going to enrich it and make it much more potent. You know, you could make CBD distillates, THC distillates, a blend of the two. And so a lot of people will send us like the ground up material that they're going to process, so they have an idea of what to expect at the end. So a little bit of both. Sometimes we see it blindly. Sometimes they know what they're going for.
All three of these machines look like 3D printers or something.
It's, you know, they're really interesting, and you could do a million different things with these. And so that was one thing I was really lucky at NMSU. I was there for 10 years working in an analytical lab like this, and we had chemical engineers come and entomology students. A lot of people were growing algae for biofuels. Anybody on campus would come to the lab, and you have the same piece of equipment, but you have to learn how to test for all of the different things. And so that hands-on experience is something that is forever valuable.
Okay.
Paul's still over here in the sterile hood, and so he's got laminar air blowing at him. We have some Petri films I'll show you in the refrigerator here, so he can keep this in the hood. We buy these Petri films from 3M, and they're all for specific microbes, and so yeast and mold, Enterobacter, Rapid Aerobic. All of these are specific for the microbes that the department requires us to test for. And so he will do an extraction up front, and ultimately those could be plated on all of these different films. We've got different temperature incubators. Some of these enrich hotter and cooler. Some have to go through multiple steps before you can put them on the plate. And so that process takes us about 72 hours. That's why we can't just turn around samples every 24 hours. We grow them out and visually identify the colonies that are present, and it just takes a couple of days to do that.
I'm assuming we don't want microbes, or we do?
We're looking for similar stuff that your groceries would get. You know, is there E. coli? Is there salmonella? More things that indicate like cleanliness and good practices are what we're after. So.
As opposed to microbes that are in the soil that keep things.
Oh yeah, some of those are beneficial. You know what I mean? And so we're really looking at the things that would make you sick.
I'm really starting to get the impression that this is not for everybody to open a testing lab.
Well, and you know, everybody thinks like, oh, I'm going to have a lab and it's so easy. And there's a lot of moving parts, and I'm glad that you guys can come and see this and realize that it's not just a couple of guys on a couch in a closet smoking joints and putting labels on things. You know, there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, personally testing things. Yeah.
You know, all of these guys have master's degrees. They've all published. They've been in a research setting. And so this is not let's grab somebody off of the street and train them up real quick, you know. Mm-hmm. Whenever you want to come back, you're totally welcome.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks again.
Well, Andy, that was way more complicated than I thought.
Yes, it was. It was.
I mean, I don't have a strong science background.
I was going to say, how many times did your eyes gloss over as he's talking?
I decided not to take chemistry in high school and went to biology. So I was, yeah. Anyway, I just knew it was like, wow, this is very sophisticated, and they have very smart people working here.
Few moments of, I'll take your word for it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Growing Forward is a collaboration between New Mexico Political Report and New Mexico PBS.
Catherine Connolly designed our logo, and thanks as always to our producer, Kevin McDonald. Don't forget to subscribe to Growing Forward to get the latest episodes.